Yes, obviously Max had to pull out at the last minute, so I'm his colleague. As you can hear, I'm not very Italian, unlike Max, so I'll be giving his talk for him. It is at the last minute, so please forgive me if I look a bit blank occasionally. So this is basically, once again, the accumulation of Max's PhD. Max's PhD was this over the last 3 years and back at QUT in Australia. And so this is basically a summary of that and his final chapter through that. So it's a bit of a shame he couldn't be here, but I'll do my best. So once again, we're talking about subtropical regions. Basically a 60% increase in cereal grain required to feed the 9 billion people by 2050. Most of this population increase is going to be in subtropical regions, where most of the demographic growth is going on at the moment, and we're expecting a lot of intensification in these regions, and most of the soil, one of the dominant soil types in these regions is oxisols. So I mentioned sort of in the previous talk, even though it's quite a small proportion in Australia, globally it is very important, particularly across sub-Saharan Africa and South America. So what is the problem here? Basically, the intensification of agricultural systems through the increased use of synthetic N is leading to greenhouse gas emissions, it's leading to other environmental pollutants, but it's also costing farmers money. And basically, we need some new strategies to help secure future subtropical cereal production, and doing that without increasing nitrogen fertilizer use and or greenhouse gas emissions. So the hypothesis of this whole study, I suppose, in this final chapter, was nitrous oxide emissions can be reduced by better matching nitrogen fertilizer demand with plants and supply. So once again, we're really focusing on the agronomy here, trying to not only get the win-win situation where we can reduce emissions, we can also reduce nitrogen inputs, hopefully save the farmer some dollars. To do this, we need to basically increase the longevity of fertilizer nitrogen in the soil and reduce the amount of nitrogen that's available, particularly in the subtropics, to denitrification. So the strategies we looked at in this particular study were legumes, so legumes within the crop rotation. These are typically summer-dominated cropping regions, but we do have winter cropping if there's water available, or opportunistic if it's rainfall. And so basically how the legume can fertilise the subsequent crop. And once again, looking at building on what I was talking about in the previous talk, using the nitrification inhibitor DMPP. I see some talks on DCD. DMPP is quite commonly used in Australia. There's been a lot of research onto it, and so it seems to be effective in some regards. Basically, both of these strategies aim to slow nitrification rates, reduce the amount of nitrate available in the soil for denitrification, and hopefully better match that with plant uptake. So what did we do? We used, along with help from Steve Del Grosso here, used the Descent model, biogeochemical model, to basically compare these different strategies of nitrification inhibitors and legumes on nitrous oxide losses and also yields in various cereal crops grown in this particular region, and determine the best agronomically and economically sound strategies to support future intensification. So treatments were basically, we looked at a nitrification inhibitor. We have field data from this from a separate project, not what I was talking about before, on a wheat maize rotation. Wheat's in this case is winter wheat, so it's grown over the winter season and then goes straight into the maize summer cropping. Zero nitrogen, conventional, just standard urea. Most of the urea is knifed in, so we don't have volatilization losses so much. So we're looking at the effect of the nitrification inhibitor, DMPP. The second treatment was obviously the legumes, and this was in a legume sorghum wheat rotation. Once again, the wheat being the winter crop, and the sorghum being the summer crop. And in this case, I don't know what the legume was, but it was a winter legume. So basically, we applied standard rates. We compared the cereal versus legume cereal at different rates. So we accounted for the estimated mineralisation from those legume residues, and we reduced our synthetic fertiliser rate in comparison by 30 kilograms per hectare. Methodologies we used, we didn't actually measure out in the ocean. We were in that same region I talked about before. Subtropical Queensland, we used a combination of automatic chambers where they collect 8 fluxes per day, so high resolution measurements, connected into an Institute GC, spits out a sample every 3 minutes. Combined with other measurements such as all the soil parameters, high resolution moisture data, obviously a lot of agronomy data as well, and 15N recoveries to basically get the data sets that we required for the model calibration. So basically this is what he used for the parameters he used to calibrate the Descent model. By 3 seasons, by 2 crop rotations, by 8 nitrogen treatments. So it was quite a substantial data set, and the amount of confidence that we have in the way that the model performed was quite high, because we could basically test it against all these different parameters. And the scenarios we ran were then basically the effect of the inhibitor DMPP plus or minus conventional fertiliser rates and straight urea, and then also with the inclusion of the legume in the rotation, once again plus or minus 20%, on the wheat, maize, sorghum. These are the sort of crops that we were looking at, and we tested that on long-term rainfall, so over 50 years. And as maybe some of you saw from my last talk, we did have quite a lot of difference between the measurement years, so this long-term scenario is quite important to sort of get the best option in the long run. So just a few slides on results, basically how well the model performed. Pretty good, really, for waterfield pore space. There's a few local site parameters at this site where at depth there was a bit of a hardpan layer that didn't pick up so much, but otherwise it did that all pretty well. Once again, with mineral nitrogen, and particularly this is where the use of the nitrification inhibitor, we basically had to put in a factor for the inhibition of nitrification, and to match these mineral nitrogen values that we saw. I don't really know what that factor was. I think it was 0.75 or something like that. But you can see with that, it matched that data quite well. And subsequently, also the yields were quite good, and also nitrous oxide emissions. One thing I'll point out quickly here is there is a bit of a lag between when we see our major nitrous oxide emissions and what the model predicted to be the nitrous oxide emissions. Obviously, the rainfall event was here, but we actually saw a week-long lag there. And so whether we're seeing N2 production first or whether it's just a diffusion thing in the soil, we're not quite sure about, but obviously there's something with the model that we can further improve there. Quickly go through some of the results. So what did we see in the wheat? Pretty much no effect of either DMPP on nitrous oxide emissions or grain yield. This is not overly surprising, seeing though this is our dry season. If there is rain for a crop, it's quite opportunistic, and it's relatively low compared to the summer rain events. So we're not going to have those big denitrification losses there. So in this case, the standard practice was pretty much spot on anyway. Compared that to summer sorghum and maize, however, we do start to see, compared to the same rates in the urea versus the DMPP, we're seeing that same response that we saw within my results earlier. And so N2O works well. We're not, once again, not seeing that in the legumes as well. So sorry, getting ahead of myself. We see that same drop in the legumes, so basically we can reduce our emissions quite well. Once again, this is long term, so this is over 50 years averaged. Grain yield, if we look at maize, even though we're seeing that reduction in nitrous oxide, once again we're not seeing that come across into the yields. So this data actually supports, even though this was done before the previous data I presented, it does support that quite well, that even though we are seeing a reduction in nitrous oxide emission, we're not seeing that picked up in the yields, even if we reduce our nitrogen application rate. So maybe there's something else going on there with the denitrification N2-N2O ratios. However, nitrous oxide reduced in sorghum quite well under the legume treatment. So legumes, are quite a good option for reducing nitrous oxide there. And we can also, what he says here is that there's no significant difference in yield, even though there is a trend, I suppose, that the legumes are the same as the conventional plus 20%. So you could basically say, yes, we can save our legumes and have the same sort of yields as adding actually 20% more nitrogen. So legumes are quite a good option in these systems providing that additional nitrogen into the subsequent crop. I don't really know what we're saying on this slide, but I think this is talking about the long-term effectiveness of these scenarios. And actually, if you look at cropping back-on-back cereal crops versus incorporating a legume in the system, it appears that we're actually getting reduced yields if we lower our nitrogen rate by quite a lot more than if we're using the legume in the system. So by reducing our nitrogen rate by 20-odd percent in the long run, it has a bigger effect doing that in the back-on-back cereal versus the legume cereal rotation. Couple of slides briefly on increasing nitrogen rates N2O. This is more just what happens if you increase your fertilizer rates. Once again, we're seeing quite an exponential increase in our nitrous oxide emissions. DMPP, very similar to the results I showed before, actually, which is not coincidence, I swear. Similar things, so exponential versus linear. So, although they're both exponential in this case. Both increased under the legumes, but slight minor increase in emissions as fertiliser rate increases under the cereal versus the legume cereal. And summer crop versus winter crop, DMPP versus non-DMPP. Certainly the summer crops, as you increase fertiliser rates, increase a lot more, much higher. Once again, we're talking about big denitrification events during the summer. The DMPP does do well in decreasing nitrous oxide emissions, and really in the winter crop it's not really much of an issue. So as far as the economics goes, forget about it. So in conclusion, for the industry, the legume phase offers a sustainable, agronomically effective, transferable strategy. The key thing I didn't really mention then is at the moment, just with the way the economics are of the commodity prices and whatnot, putting a legume in the system is not very economically viable, because of they can get much better prices for sorghum than they can for the legume, unless you can significantly reduce your fertiliser or use the legume as a fertiliser for the subsequent crop. Remember, we had 30% of our variable input costs are associated with fertiliser in these systems. So if we can actually use some of that legume and we can quantify, we can show that we can use some of that legume for the next crop, it becomes more economically viable and the farmers are more likely to put it into the rotation. In the long run, so over 50 years, at the current prices, maybe nitrification inhibitors such as DMPP are not going to work, purely on the economics, on the yields. They do a good job at reducing N2O, but if farms are going to take them up without a price incentive, they're probably not going to happen. But hopefully, on a global scale, we can sort of use this information to increase our subtropical cereal productivity. And that's it.
Thank you very much. Time for a couple of questions.
Yeah, I do have a question. I had the same question in the previous talk, and that is, if I understood you correctly, you're saying you do find a difference in our software emissions, but you don't find a difference in yield. Is it possible that the amount you actually save in the nitrogen to reduce nitrous oxide emissions is just relatively small?
Absolutely.
And actually not actually having an effect on
No, I mean, we're adding, I mean, if you look at the emission factors, it's 0.9. So that's going to have no influence on yields at all. But it just comes down to this assumption that our losses are associated with denitrification. And when you start talking about nitrous oxide to N2 ratios, total denitrification, we know from our 15N recoveries, we are losing 30 to 40%. We're not losing it as leaching. It's not a volatilisation because it's, you know, knifed in. Mass balance tells us it's denitrification. We measure N2O. It's nothing there. But so maybe it's N2. I suppose the couple of things are, just because you're reducing the nitrous oxide emissions doesn't necessarily mean you're reducing total denitrification. And that appears to be the case, that these N2, N2O ratios are not fixed. You know, they do vary quite a lot. And we might actually just be moving it from one form to another without actually, you know, solving the problem, really. But, you know, from a climate change point of view, it does.
He had a question first.
Just a follow-on on that. If you're inhibiting nitrification, you're inhibiting N2O and N2.
Mm.
The question really is around immobilization. And have you used your 15N to estimate immobilization in those high organic?
That is the next research question. We've done a little bit of that on dairy that has shown that, yes, the DMPP will increase immobilisation. And this is one thing probably the model doesn't do at the moment, but mainly because we don't know. And really why we need long-term studies here, because, you know, we might not... The other option, apart from it being lost as N2, is it actually is going into the soil organic matter. And it might not be available for this crop, but maybe the next crop or the subsequent crop. So long-term studies... field trials are really needed to determine that, yes. And in the dairy, we've got work in pastures as well, and that's certainly shown that the DMPP does increase immobilisation.
With the 15N,
yes, that's right.
You have the data, so
yeah, it's in a dairy paper, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just, you know, kind of similar question to what But I guess my other question to you now is, when you talk about the recovery, is it that's of the yield, green yield?
Total recoveries. So yield, so 15N in the grain, the plant, the soil, the roots.
That's total.
Everything.
End of it.
Yeah. And soil recovery as well, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.